My conscience is at the end of the table is working. The meeting of the Senate Education Committee will come to order. We have two bills on our agenda today. Senator Hand's bill on charter school authorizer deadline, and Senator Hand will invite you to the table.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members.
Senator Hand.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. I am offering Senate File 55, and would you like me to move to adopt it so we can talk about it? Would that be the appropriate procedure?
Yeah, we can. Mm-hmm.
All right, Madam Chair, then I would move that we adopt Senate File 55, and I believe if we pass it, it should just go directly to the floor. So that would be my motion.
I believe that's where it does. I don't think there's another stop that's required, but we won't take action on the motion that will accept that the Senate File 55 is on the table, and go ahead and explain
all
the
right.
Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Many of you who were here last year recall that we passed some very significant legislation on charter school governance. There were a number of issues that have been raised over the years since Minnesota became the first state in the country to adopt charter schools. And there were issues about, authorization in particular. And we did a lot of work on that issue last year, and we passed, I thought, a well-crafted and significant piece of legislation. Since that time, in the course of transitioning to the new authorization structure, which for newer members understand the charter schools all have to have what we used to call a sponsor, we're now calling it an authorizer, and there are certain conditions that they have to comply with to be able to operate in the state of Minnesota. And the reform that we passed last year dealt a lot with the substance of those things and the changes that were required. There was also a timeline established in the bill by which existing charter schools would have to be reauthorized under the auspices of the new law. And that time frame, if you look on page 4 of your bill, was June 30th of 2011, which is coming up in a few months at the close of our legislative session. There was concerns raised since that time in the recent few months that I began to hear about it from the charter school world that perhaps there might be a need to extend that time frame to give existing charter schools an opportunity to comply with the law. And so the bill that I have is simply changing the date from 2011 to 2012, extending the period of compliance for existing charter schools an additional year. That is really all this bill does. It does not change any of the policy that we had in the last bill that we passed last year. And the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools has been very instrumental in this issue and working with our charter schools across the state. And I know Gene Piccolo is here, and I'd like to ask if you'd be willing to come forward and maybe give some additional perspective beyond my scope to answer.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. As was mentioned, all this bill does is just provide another 12 months for current sponsors or authorizers to get approved under the new regulations and the new standards. We made a sea change in terms of the expectations and standards, and we need a little more time to get everybody up to capacity to make this work. So that's all this does.
Thank you, and I think you could add to that with the change of administration, there's a lot of other kinds of change and adjustment going on at the department, and I would think it gives them a little breathing room as well.
It will provide that too.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Piccolo. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the postponement postpone just the authorizer, or does it the authorizing component of it, or does it postpone all of the other provisions that were in that bill?
Ms. Pickle.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, it only doesn't postpone, it just gives another 12 months for current authorizers. It doesn't change anything else in the implementation of the law.
Okay. So, Mr. Piccolo, it doesn't affect all the current schools that are chartered by the sponsor are carried with it to that point as well?
Madam Chair, yes. They could be carried for another year. If an authorizer is going to get out of the authorizing business, those schools still have to find a new authorizer by June 30th. But there are a number of authorizers who are still in the process of putting together their capacity to meet the new standards. There are some that have gone through the process, haven't been successful, have to do some more work, and this just gives everybody a little more breathing time to get it through.
So, Mr. Chair, if that were to happen, you don't think the current charter schools need any further time? They have until June, did you say, to?
Madam Chair, those, for example, if it's an authorizer that has not been yet approved, they could extend the contracts with the charter schools they authorize until June 30th, 2012.
Okay.
But not beyond that.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stubb.
Thank you. Could you just give us a kind of a snapshot picture of what is actually going on in the authorizers? The new law had a number of new criteria that was spelled out. Is that the reason why there's a quite a significant change in authorizers, or is it just that the authorizers themselves are saying, well, I'm just going to not get out of, I'm going to get out of the business of sponsorship or authorizing?
Mr. Pickle.
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, I think both things have happened. We knew there would be some authorizers that would move out of the process once there were higher expectations than were there before. Because up until 2 years ago when this body passed this legislation, there were no standards for basically authorizers. All you had to do is meet the basic criteria, being a school district, a college or university, or a nonprofit, and you could authorize. So now they have to demonstrate capacity. And so part of it is the department needed time to put in place the process to apply and then to review the authorizers that do apply. And there's been, when you're doing a sea change in expectations, there's some of the, you know, you got to, there's some things that don't work exactly right the first time through. And so there's been some adjustments that have been made through the process. And then there's others who have decided not to be part of this anymore, and they're withdrawing. And so because we don't have enough currently approved authorizers for schools whose contracts all end June 30th, they would not have time. They don't have enough. There's not enough currently approved authorizers to make those transfers happen to new authorizers.
Senator Bonham.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we had a situation in Hopkins. We had two charter schools at the Hopkins School District was the original sponsor. When we made the changes, they did not want that added burden, and so they let these two charter schools, and both of them were quite successful, but they let them know they were no longer going to be doing that. And these two charter schools have had trouble getting another authorizer and did come and request an exception. So that's why I was in support of the bill, because I thought it shouldn't be handled on a case-by-case basis, that perhaps other schools had the same problem.
So is there any further questions or discussion? Otherwise, Senator Hahn renews his motion, and I wonder if the committee would agree that this might be a candidate for the consent calendar. Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair, I just assume there's no fiscal note.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and members, there is a fiscal note in your packet. There is no cost assigned to it. So Mr. Nauman requested a note just to be sure. But there is no cost to extending this deadline at all, and so that has no fiscal impact.
Okay. So is that agreeable to the committee that we refer that to the consent calendar? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is
Thank
passed.
You, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. I will turn the chair over to
Senator Nelson? Senator Olson, welcome to the table. All right, let's see. You're going to present for us Senate File 69.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Do you have an author's amendment that you'd like?
Can we just hold on that for just a minute?
Sure.
I just want to give you, especially since there are so many new members to the committee, a little historical perspective. This is a bill that amends the compulsory attendance law. And sometimes we don't always think of the compulsory attendance law. You know, what's that got to do with things? Well, my first term here in the legislature, the Supreme Court overruled that our compulsory attendance law was unconstitutional. And it was based on a lack of clarity as to who really was authorized, if you will, to educate and teach children. And it applies to whether parents have a right to home educate. It applies to our private schools as well. And I was asked to carry a legislation that would do that clarification. So that was one of the first major education issues that I cut my teeth on, so to speak. And we had a study of it over the interim that year, and came back with, a broad consensus of the kinds of provisions that we wanted in that law, and it served well with, I think, very minor change, some attempts, but no substantive change has occurred over the years. I should take one exception. Senator Scheid was one who passed the legislation that opened the door to homeschoolers being eligible to participate in extracurricular activities in their residential, their school district of residence. This movement of homeschoolers and home education has matured over the years. And a couple of years ago, as we were looking at what kinds of mandate relief we could be, we decided, and former Representative Tuma did some analysis and looking through, is there something that could change here? Because, number one, while we say it's homeschool mandate relief, it actually is a relief to our school districts as well in terms of some of the administrative handling and forms that are involved. And the provisions that are in the bill, this is the third time before us. It has passed the Senate 2 years in a row, and somehow in the vagaries of the process that I won't belabor, it has not become law. And so we are, this hopefully the third year is the charm. There are provisions that affect the relationship with the Department of Public Safety, with the district attorneys, with the superintendents. And all of these provisions have been worked through. There's another provision in it that essentially changes, and for the homeschoolers, remove themselves from eligibility for textbook aid and guidance and health counseling and health service aid, which actually saves the state money. So that's just kind of a general overview and perspective that the homeschooling as well as our private schools are under the same provisions as all schools in terms of the basic subjects that have to be included in their instruction. That's in the compulsory attendance section of the law, rather than just our curriculum and elaboration that we do have for other public schools other than those that are addressed with the provisions in this law. So I think I'm going to let Representative Tuma talk through a few of the provisions in the in the bill. And I do have a couple small author's amendments that add one of the changes here in more than one place because it was not clear on page, I think both of them are on page 5.
Senator Olson, would you like Representative Tuma to explain, or would you like to move the bill and the amendments first?
I will move. Well, I'm not sure if we even have to move the bill. We can still move to amend the author's amendment.
So. Go ahead and move the bill.
Well, I would recommend that Senate File 69 be recommended to pass. And the author's amendments, I think, are being handed out right now.
Okay, and while that's being handed out, then did you want to continue on with the discussion?
I think it would be appropriate to put these on first.
Okay.
The provision on page 5 of the bill relating to provided services that defines a school as with a total enrollment of more than 15 pupils. That's the eligibility for, in this case, it is the health services. And on bottom of page 4, it's for the education materials and tests. But in clause B, it's unclear that size fits there. And so, therefore, we are adding that same language on clause B. I'm not sure what line it is, but the amendment says that. I don't have it before me.
Excuse me.
Oh, Madam Chair. Senator Scheid, who's speaking? I couldn't see.
Senator Scheid,
yes.
So it's the A3 amendment, I think. We got the
yes.
A2 amendment first, but I think, or are we doing?
I think there are, Madam Chair, I think there are two, the A2.
I explained
the A3.
Okay, so that's
let's, Senator Olson has moved amendment Senate File 69A3. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And is there any more discussion then on the A3 amendment? And do all members have it? Okay. Any more discussion on A3? All right. So let's vote on putting the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of amendment, the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Amendment passes.
As proposed.
Oh, are there any noes? All right. The amendment passes.
And A2 adds. Oh, that is a provision that just clarifies that the filing after the first year of homeschooling, making it clear that it's that first year of homeschooling in Minnesota,
yeah.
That they don't come from another state and not have to file.
It's immunization. Madam Chair, it's John Tuma.
Representative
it's for
Tuma.
The immunization requirement so that they have to follow.
Okay.
So if they come from another state at age 8, they need to file them right away what their immunizations have been for the department.
Okay.
And we appreciate the department working with us on clarifying this issue.
Okay. Senator Olson then has moved to amend Senate File 69, Amendment A2. Is there any more discussion? All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? No? Okay. All right. The amendment passes. The bill is as amended.
And Madam Chair, my name and members, my name is John Tuma. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Christian Home Educators. Senator Olson was very kind when the Minnesota School Board Association gave us your long list of suggested mandate relief that they would like from the legislature 2 years ago. They included on it the reduction in homeschool reporting. And so we took that challenge up 50 years ago. A famous Democratic president gave his inaugural speech and it said, "My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." And I think we have a guy 50 years later, I think, I would say a pretty good theme for what he said last night, too, in his speech was, let's roll up our sleeves and do what's right for Minnesota. And so we took that challenge. This is not necessarily what you would call only for homeschoolers. We work with the superintendents. We work with the School Board Association. We work with several of the state departments that are involved in the intricacies of regulating homeschooling. These are not major changes, but I think they're significant. We wanted to do our part to help the state out. I know that several homeschoolers are probably not in favor of giving up the textbook aid. It was kind of one of those odd things when we were regulated as a private schools. So the Tuma's Heath Creek Academy is no different than Holy Angels, okay? We are regulated under the same statutes. And some of our smart, cost-effective parents figured out, I can turn in one of these affidavits and get some money too. The difficulty with that and what we were told by the superintendents, one of the reasons they strongly support this legislation, they've indicated that to me that they support passage of this bill is because we're willing to put that on the table and discuss that. And the solution we came up, not popular with every homeschooler. There are some homeschoolers out there will miss this. We understand that. It's not just textbook aid. It's also aid for health services and for guidance counseling. And so it's a sacrifice. But we think from our association, the people we work with, it was a fair compromise. As with anything in this process, if we got it passed through the Senate twice, you can guess it had a lot of compromise put into it. And so, you know, if you want to give us all the money we save you in taxes back to us, we'll take it, okay? Take it gladly, but I understand that you have a little bit of a budget crisis, and so we want to do our part in helping out. It's a small part, and I think it's maybe symbolic in some ways, but it's real for some parents. And we know that not all families are going to be thrilled with this. But we also are thrilled with the savings and headaches. When Senator Olson put this law together, it wasn't her fault. This was a compromise back then, and people really didn't know what homeschooling was. And so they required superintendents to do annual visits. I can tell you right now, none of your superintendents are doing annual visits to our homeschools. When there was maybe 200 homeschools, they could. Now when we have over 6,000 homeschools in Minnesota, they would probably be fired if they would do annual visits because they would be wasting their time not doing what they're supposed to be doing. This law gets rid of annual reporting. It saves you paperwork, and it says you can do it online. Even better, saving you more paperwork. And so we're doing things that are efficient and really, I think, recognizing the relationship that has developed in the 23 years since Representative Olson gave us a very good law to work under. It's making it better and recognizing that no longer is it a regulatory relationship that we have with our school district. It is a cooperative relationship. And I think, you know, if you have any specific questions on the bill, I can answer them. They've been through this legislature several times, but I think the goal was to create an atmosphere of cooperation and working with the families and school districts to reduce your costs, to reduce paperwork that our parents have to go through, and also to recognize that superintendents and school districts do a lot of work in administrating these programs. I do have a homeschool mom, a real live homeschool mom for you. And if it's okay, Madam Chair, I'll punt it over to her for some short comments.
Yes, please introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Laura Wearing. And I'll just tell you a little bit about myself and our family. I have a high school education and 2 years college, no degree, but my husband, who's a builder, has a four-year at Carlson Business School. I've been homeschooling about 10, 12 years. And for us, education is a way of life. I absolutely love it because I am learning so much and just wanted to instill a love for learning in our kids in a variety of ways. For instance, when we would have a co-op annually, we have an international day, and each family would choose a country to report on. And then we would gather, the children would present the reports, and that gives them lots of experience to get up in front of somebody and speak, which a lot of people don't like to do, but then, you know, we would gather and there would be a potluck which would feature foods from those countries as well. And the way you can do it when you have kids of different ages is Guatemala was our country 1 year. So our youngest reported on the quetzal, the country bird, and our son did flags and money, and another daughter did her artistic, you know, mountains and all the volcanoes and the topographical map, and our oldest daughter, she did the economy and the history of the country. So that's just one way with a simple project like that, and then everybody gets to hear everybody's reports as well. But also we would do things like integrate art and book discussions, and we used the prints from the National Endowment of the Arts, which were awarded the other year. It was called America, and fabulous, like 40 by 23 prints. We would have a book to go along with the print, that historical period in the country, and then the kids would read the book and discuss the book, and then do an art project that would coincide. And so I think that there are so many, well, I know that there are so many resources available to homeschoolers today. It is absolutely amazing, and you have to, you know, really be careful, because there's so many things out there that you're going to love and you're going to want to do. You just have to, you know, right now I'm planning for next year, looking ahead and kind of getting things in order. And so we like to teach our kids a variety of interests. We like them to be able to apply their knowledge, whether it's working around the home, doing the job. Our kids get hired by neighbors to do various jobs. They actually have more money than I do. And they are involved in, you know, many different institutions throughout the state as far as going for field trips. And we have, you know, our kids are involved in the volunteering, and we are involved in different co-ops. We do everything from going to the opera to, you know, all the different things that this very amazingly artistic environment in our city offers. So I also wanted to say that I think this bill is really wonderful, because it's a win-win situation for the state, for the school superintendents, and for homeschoolers alike. And as a citizen, homeowner, and home educator, it's important to pass the bill with the language. It's economical. It's ecologically sound because of the vast amount of paperwork, plus for the, you know, superintendents having to push paper that wouldn't be, you know, necessary. Also, the savings of the $80 per student, I mean, that wouldn't even begin to cover what we spend. So, you know, it's something that is fine to give up. And I just wanted to finish with saying that the online reporting, you know, the one-time online, I mean, that's really great, and it's really up-to-date for the way our society is operating today to be able to do that online. I traditionally have just gone to the school and popped in and chatted and visited because it was so close. And then let's let our very busy school superintendents get to the purpose of their work, to intend over their many important and needful demands and responsibilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Waring. Members, do you have any questions or comments? Yes.
Senator Schein. I do have a question. Ms. Waring, I wondered, in relation to something Mr. Tuma said about the textbook aid, do you ever get any textbooks from the schools? Do they, or what the experience of other families? I just was curious to know if districts share some of the textbooks or not. I understand you would do a lot of things on your own and get a lot of materials.
I have never gotten any textbooks from the schools.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I think, you know, the process.
Senator Olson.
Yes, Madam Chair, and Senator Scheid. The process that is the process that's also very cumbersome in terms of school. It isn't maybe the superintendent, but is the assistants or the staff. They do have to order the books through the school, and the school technically owns them.
Oh.
So if you have a family with several children at different ages, it isn't like a private school coming in and wanting a set of texts for a class and ordering them from one company. You could have a gazillion orders, even to, you know, possibly to get to that dollar per student, and it's a lot of paperwork and ordering, and then when they come, getting them to them, and then essentially the school is the owner of them.
So, Representative Tuma?
Oh, Madam Chair, and our mothers are very creative. They know the best thing to do is they always get their workbooks through this program because they know they're consumable and none of the school not want them back. And even some school districts, to the point where they got so tired of administrating this, have actually just sent the parents an $85 check. I don't want to hassle with it, even though that's really violating the law. It just was easier for them to do that. Well, we found out that several of them got audited a couple years ago and found out that they were actually supposed to be giving, I think, 1090s or something to the families were supposed to be. And the families were kind of like, what's going on? You know, so that was really not what was the intent of the law. It was just trying to get around the provision where we can't provide aid to private schools. And so it was really designed for your St. Teresa's Catholic schools and those schools that it was designed for. We just kind of got shoehorned into it. And it's not a bad program, but we also have the tax credit and deductions. And those are available to the families. And so it's not as, you know, it's not a dollar-for-dollar thing like the textbook aid for that first $85. But there are those programs out there that we can deduct our stuff from. So it's a sacrifice, but there are alternatives. And I'll tell you, right now, from the statistics, I think only about a third of the families use the textbook aid program.
Madam Chair? Senator Scheid, excuse me.
I was one of those once.
Yes.
I was, too.
Mr. Tuma, I understand that, and I'm certainly very supportive of the legislation. I know in my conversations over the years with some school officials, you know, public school officials, that there's, I don't know if the word's hostility, but there's been concern and I'd say some degree of hostility toward homeschooling families, and I just have felt so strongly that how we educate our children is the parents' absolute right, and that this provides a really important, and I think it's been very successful in Minnesota. And so, but I was wondering if there was any cooperation, but now you mentioned the aid, public aid to private schooling. I was hoping that maybe some districts were being cooperative enough to share some of the texts and materials that the student might use. I'm not talking about the reimbursement.
Right, Madam Chair. I missed that. My apologies, Madam Chair and Senator Scheid. I kind of missed that nuance of the question. And let me answer this way. Homeschooling over the last 23 years has matured to the point that we actually have our own market.
Okay.
You know, it used to be the only people you could get books from were Abeka and the big book providers. Now there is this kind of subculture that really markets to the homeschooling style. And so there's not a typical desire to come in and get that textbook that is designed for the school system. They're really looking for one that's designed for kind of their way of teaching. And so we have a very vibrant used book exchange programs. They're on email lists. I'm sure you get them same thing. I have a set of, Sunlight books. Anybody want them? And so there is this kind of underground market of people transferring their curriculum between each other. I'm sure they pay taxes on them. I'm not sure whether they do or not. But there is that separate market that's kind of going on underneath it. And as far as the cooperation, not so much in textbook, but, for example, Fergus Falls had some extra school space. They actually offered to the local co-op to come in and use it for doing their science labs. So there really is an effort by school districts. I even understand there's grants from the Obama administration that put in the last stimulus bill to encourage public schools to open up to alternative schools in their area to bring them in. And so there is a different mindset amongst administrators to cooperate with homeschoolers, and they've been very good about that. Those opportunities are happening, not so much on textbooks, but it really is on programming and bringing us, letting us participate like you allowed us to with regards to athletics. That's really opened up the doors, band, things like that, very common.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, just to that point, too, I believe that the superintendents, I've had superintendents come to me and say, you know, I've done an about face and recognize the value and the value of cooperation. The homeschool, and I've had districts, I remember some homeschool families I happened to be in within earshot, and they were absolutely amazed. The superintendent had sent out a letter inviting them to consider, you know, taking whether it was band or you know, some of the offerings that they may not have available to them, and what, you know, just opening that door to them. And I think a lot of them have
discovered that these people vote, and they vote in referendum elections too, and so it doesn't hurt to build goodwill for with all of their citizens. And I think there's definitely been a move afoot on there. I hopefully it also reflects something that I believe very strongly in, and that's people rise to the level of expectation. And I believe in high expectations. And I fully expect that parents do care about the way their children are educated and that they want what's best for them. And I would not assume. There are provisions when somebody uses this law and attending to that if there's a neglect. But this movement, from all the years I've seen it, has made me proud to be a part of any legislation that has helped it to go forward.
Members.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I have a question.
Just a question. We have talked about the books, but it also, I think, includes the health services component. Under current practice, maybe this Mr. Nauman can clarify this. Under current practice, can the local district levy for the safe schools levy for these students because they're receiving assistance for a certain amount for health purposes? Are they included under this the local district's levy?
Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf, no, they would not be included for the purposes of calculating the safe schools levy because they're not built into the AMCPU count, which is what drives the adjusted marginal cost pupil count is what it drives the safe schools levy, and they're not included in that count, so they would not generate levy.
Okay.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the author. Senator Olson, in the existing language in Subdivision 11, the language that you are deleting now, there is a specific language to instruct the commissioner to decide on the specific examination and where the location for the administration of this examination ought to be, and also to actually submit the results of this examination. So there are two issues that I don't know if in the proposal that you bring before us, how does that work? I don't see it. Who makes the decision about where the examination takes place is one question. And then the second question, I presume that we really want to make sure that the results of these examinations are available. Parents want that. I presume parents would like that, and the districts would like that. In general, the state would like to see, you know, how the children are doing. So could you point to me kind of how those two pieces will work in the language? I'm trying to read it as fast as I can to understand where those provisions are.
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, you're referring to a Section 11, and I haven't found that.
Section 1.
Excuse me, Section 1, Subdivision 11.
Can you address that?
Yes. Madam Chair.
Representative Tuma.
Senator Torres Reyes. Right now, the requirement under state law is this, that we as the private school, if we have to do an assessment, have to agree with the superintendent on what the assessment is. It needs to be a nationally norm reference test, and there is no requirement in law. We've actually fought this out with a long time ago with the school district. There is no requirement in law that those results be made public or to the school district. And so those are that's private information meant just for the private school. And so right now the only thing the superintendents interact with us regarding the testing is selecting what test and the manner of the test being. Superintendents, when we worked down and sat down with them, said, we're not necessarily doing that at this stage. We'll let you do your testing under your regimen of testing, so long as it's a national norm reference test, and you as a private school select that test for them. And so this was what that reflects. Typically what homeschool parents do at this stage is they send a letter to their superintendent on October 1. submitting their report, and then they put on there, I'm going to be doing the California Achievement Test. At least that's what we do. If you have any objections, let us know. Some of you put down there, to be determined, and we've never had a superintendent complain. There's never been a mediation for the selection of tests that I am aware of, and I represent over 3,000 of the homeschool families in Minnesota. And so superintendents really are not getting actively engaged in this. And so this reflects really the relationship we have. It's the responsibility of the parents to select that test and to choose which is best for them. And the superintendents are saying, that's okay. We don't need to interfere with that decision.
Madam Chair, a follow-up.
Senator Torres, right?
Thank you. I understand that part of the examination, because the language is clear. You said standardized achievement examination or a nationally recognized college entrance exam. But what I am asking, the language that you are deleting now provides for a specific requirement that you make an agreement for the location for the parents, which to me makes sense so that they decide what is best for the family. That's now deleted from the language, so what are the parents supposed to do? How do they decide with whom and how they make a decision about the location?
Representative Tuma.
Madam Chair, they do it themselves. There's a huge industry out there already providing these tests. They're usually done at the local co-ops that are started by homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. They provide the tests for them. There's even tests that allow I to administer it as a parent, too. So there's a whole series of tests that you can select from, and there's a whole series of people out there providing these tests for a family. So the parent would just pick up the phone and call the local co-op and say, who's doing the test this year, and how can I sign up for it? And that's pretty much how it happens. They set that up themselves. So the school's not involved in that. And parents would work it out with those schools. All the testing services have a special code for homeschoolers. And the special code would then go back to the administrator. The administrator sends a test score back to the parent.
A follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Torres, right.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I have trust that most of the parents who make this decision are pretty responsible and they will know. But there might be a situation where a parent really needs that support and needs to have that conversation and that guidance. And I think we're taking away that opportunity with this legislation, because they don't have now that, I can call and make this decision and figure out what's available to me. So you really need to have, there is an assumption here that you're working with parents who really know how to access those systems and know all of those tests and those systems that are available to them. And, it's just to point out, and I hope it works, but I do believe that there is a value on having this language in here that provides that opportunity to a parent to say, call, and if you don't know, just kind of get. I agree that the language, the previous language may be, confused and is asking, too much, but not having anything at all in the language that says, you can call here and determine the location is not a good service to a parent that may be thinking about homeschooling their parents, but their kids, but don't actually know how to go about it.
I see what
Representative
you're saying, Madam Chair and Representative Torres-Reyes. Actually, there's a very vibrant network of homeschoolers out there. We represent quite a few of these co-ops that are together. They do work. It's pretty easy to network in to find out what services are available. The moms are taking care of that actually themselves. Also, most of our public schools will allow a private school student or a homeschooler to come in and take their tests that they're providing that you require them to take. Those are available to them, too. Mm-hmm. I don't think school districts are going to turn away requests for information from homeschoolers. They have always been very cooperative with every homeschool that I talk to. Recognizes that the superintendents are doing exactly what Senator Olson are saying. Call me up if you have any questions. I will provide, services for you. We have these things going on. And so I think those networks are there privately. I don't think the schools are turning them away and saying, we're not going to give you help. And you have access to the state testing if you choose to use it. Obviously, we tell our families to go ahead and use an Iowa Basics test or those type of things that you can get through a private vendor. That would be what we suggest to people. And we have lots of memberships. I know, Laura, you probably, when you started homeschooling, it was one of those deals where you didn't know what you were doing and you just called up a friend, and before you knew it, you had tons of information on how to do it. I know some people can fall through the cracks, But if they look hard, look not very hard, they can find friends and family that are out there ready to help.
Members, is there any other discussion? Any other questions?
Oh.
Senator Wiggins.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Olson, as you indicated, this has passed twice before. I was the chief author on that omnibus bill, and I support it again. But I won't miss the chance to ask. There is a reference in here to the compulsory attendance bill, which also has passed twice. And we worked closely with Mr. Tuma and others on that. And I don't have an amendment here, but perhaps you might think of further strengthening that bill on the floor as it had been worked out before. Just something to think about.
I'm sure you'll have that opportunity on the floor. Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Wiegar, you know, there's room for accommodation, but it didn't necessarily mean that they wanted to have that compulsory attendance law, you know, extended. They are, you know, the first, I don't know if I've got memorized in my head, but the first sentence, I believe, in that compulsory attendance law says that it's the parent that has the obligation for the education of their children in citizenship for our That's the strength of it. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of that, and we shouldn't withdraw that expectation. It's both a strong right inherent in parenthood, and it's an expectation, and I don't think we should weaken it. So I don't believe that stops learning from, you know, it constrains learning from continuing because of the age that you have, we have in either at the beginning or the end of our compulsory attendance law. Okay.
Members, is there any other discussion?
I might not agree on that whole subject, but.
Yes. Senator Steben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Olson, and, you know, being new to this committee, I'm sorry if this is a stupid question, but can you just give a little bit of background on, on how homeschooling works in terms of testing students' rigor or the rigorousness of their curriculum? I mean, from what I can tell, it's largely up to the parent to determine, but is there, say there is a bad actor out there who wants their child homeschooled and then kind of falls off the wagon and doesn't keep that rigor moving forward, are there any safeguards in place to ensure the child is learning something? Or what am I missing to pull this together for me?
Senator Olson.
I think inherent in the network that has grown is that there's nobody that feels more strongly about not having any mark besmirch the home's education and that right. They are the most vigilant among themselves and ones if they know that people are saying they're homeschooling. That's more likely to be where a report of a negligence would occur, and that provision is still there in terms of working with the county attorneys. It's modified somewhat in terms of what the role of the superintendent is, but that has been negotiated. They're not trying to protect neglect, but I think it's been the history. The history of the movement, we haven't seen that.
Right,
much.
I'm sure, but could...
Senator Steben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just explain, or Mr. Tonheim, Tuma, sorry,
okay.
Mr. Tuma, explain how, what the enforcement is, I'm sure it very rarely happens, but I'm not familiar with it.
Representative Tuma.
Madam Chair and Senator Steben, those are good questions. What we try to do is make sure we didn't interfere with what we really know that the prosecution course is. It's a classic example that you have an enabled teen whose parents have not been responsible, probably been part of the problem, and they get to 15, the kid's involved in gangs.
Pull your mic. I think it's not picking up.
They're involved in gangs or involved in something that's bad. And they get to 15, and the parents are fighting with the school district, and the parents finally go, we're going to go homeschool. Okay, what happens in that environment? And what we've designed in a system, and I actually worked with Senator, then County Attorney Klobuchar, to make sure we designed the appropriate system to deal with that. Because they weren't dealing it with the truancy bill. They weren't charging this. If you go and ask the Supreme Court how many matters are charged under this truancy statute here, very few. Probably ones that were charged were probably plea bargains down or out of the CHIP system. And what we do is you use the child protection system. and it's very strong, very stringent standards as far as the requirement of education. And we made sure, and I worked with some of the county attorneys to make sure that we weren't interfering with the existing programs they have to deal with these families. When you have that recalcitrant family who just doesn't want to do it, and then is going to claim they're homeschoolers. The CHIP statute has not changed, and we want to make sure that that was. And we actually even provided requirements in this language to make sure that when they try to do that, they're not going to try to just use our statute. If you go to section dealing with records to be kept, which is, is in page 311. Parents in charge of providing instruction to a child must make documents in the subdivision available to the county attorney when a case is commenced under this statute, under the CHIPS statute, and under a diversion program that they have for truancy statutes. These diversion programs are well established in Ramsey County and Hennepin County. And that language was actually there to make sure that we weren't interfering with that. And we actually enhanced those back in 2001 to make sure that those statutes were enhanced. And we actually, in 2001, took this from a misdemeanor and made it a petty misdemeanor. And that because the avenue of dealing with those children were through the CHIPS statutes. And it was a much more effective, easy way to reach those families than this statute.
And just one quick last question.
Senator Stephen.
Madam Chair, so then traditionally, would it be a superintendent who would raise an alarm about this and bring a case for to the county attorney, or
Madam Chair and Senator Stephen, no, superintendents weren't at this level. Typically, it's a teacher or the officers, the community officers we put in our schools. Typically, it could be a probation officer, those type of things that they have already been in trouble for something else. And so what we wanted to make sure is that those kids that would attempt to try to use homeschooling as a shield did not have that attempt to do that. We still will go after them under the CHIPS statute. And so we actually enhanced that back in 2001 to do that.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, Senator Olson has moved Senate File 69 as amended be favorably reported to the Senate and referred to finance. Members, you may note there was a fiscal note here. It's one that we don't see very often. It saves money to the state. I'd call that a negative fiscal note. Senator Olson.
Well, and Madam Chair, I might add, or maybe we should take the vote first, but let's vote, and then let me explain a bit about the fiscal.
All right. Members, you have the question before you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Bill passes, referred to the Senate, and on to finance.
I would just follow up that Mr. Nauman has determined that both the cost, the rulemaking costs of our alternative licensure bill and the bill that passed out of here yesterday that involved the January 15th deadline and the cost to the state is covered by the savings in this bill. So we will see that they are together at the Finance Committee so that is understood.
Very good, Senator Olson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.
See, so you want to get on the
I wasn't going to say.